Hello, podcast listeners. We know podcasts are a great way to catch up on a program that you may have missed on KSJE, and it's provided as a free service of this radio station. But, you know, KSJE is now listener-supported, and so while you enjoy this podcast, we hope that you'll also take some time to join KSJE. Become a member today. It's quite easy to do. Just go to our website at ksje.com/support and pick the level of support that best matches your budget. Thanks again for listening. Here's your podcast.
Welcome to Native Art Voices of the Four Corners. This is Vinaya Yazzie. Today, our special guest is Franco Lee. Hello, Franco. How are you doing today?
Hi, I'm doing good. Thank you.
Would you like to introduce yourself to the public?
My name is Franco Lee. I'm White Mountain Apache from White River, Arizona. I currently reside in Waterflow. I'm also apprenticing as a weaver.
Okay, great. I'm interested in knowing a little bit more about how you decided to become a part of this organization, as you are White Mountain Apache.
Yes.
And I'm not sure if White Mountain Apache weave or not. So what was your interest that brought you to this organization and to the idea of doing what you're doing now?
The idea behind the organization was to learn more about the Navajo culture. From the pastoral background, leading all the way up to the weaving, all that's entailed in that. I am an Apache. I am not familiar with any of that. We don't herd sheep. We don't weave. Mm. The only type of weaving that we do is basketry. So with the Navajo weaving, it's very intriguing and interesting, not only for me, but the opportunity to learn something that I can share with my two sons. They're half Navajo and half Apache. They don't have very much instruction or teaching in the Navajo culture or traditions. It's vague in their life, and I don't want them to, you know, to be lost, more or less. I want them to have a sense of where they come from, to know who they are, to identify with themselves, identify themselves as a Navajo male. And so when they travel, who knows where, I've traveled around the world as a chef, and, you know, I identify myself as an Apache when I travel, and I share my stories, I share songs, I share teachings that were passed down, and it's good, and it helps you wherever you go. So that is to be able to obtain a knowledge and share it with my kids so that they know who they are. It was the real idea, the main concept of learning the Navajo culture, the tradition, the pastoral tradition.
It's great that I hear you saying that, Franco, because a lot of times Native parents in our communities are very more interested in their lives, right? And a lot of times it's because of socioeconomic situations, and then they think about their kids maybe after the fact. And so a lot of times our young children are getting left behind in their own cultural teachings. And that's just kind of a fact of why, you know, how it is to live in a modern culture. Our kids go to school and they have their activities in the modern American society, but then they also have to play a role in their cultural community. And I think that's really great for you as a parent doing this and really acknowledging that your kids need to learn also. So I'm really great that that's what's happening with you. I think once you learn a art or a technique of creation of art, it stays with you forever. Whether you decide to practice it or not, it's always going to be there, you know, something that you will know. So I think weaving is one of those things that can do that. And although, you know, you said weaving's not a part of Apache culture as far as wool goes, but for basketry it is. Do you know any more about that process of basketry, or in your culture, is it still being done?
Yes, there are people who still weave baskets where I'm from. It's something that's fading. Mm-hmm. There's not a lot of people that know a lot about it anymore. You know, as today's world is so much different than the past. Yeah, we're doing a talk a few years ago about why, and, you know, everything today is push a button. So with that, you lose everything that it takes to push that button, you know, because it's so easy. It's fading fast. The same with the Navajo art, with weaving or silversmithing, things like that, that I see on the reservation. And I'm surprised when I go to other communities or participate in events with Dene Bi'ina and realize that it is not as strong as I thought it was. It's very few people out there that really know the whole process. And we get people that come over and ask us to show them. It makes it even more interesting for me because I'm Apache and, you know, I share what I know with Navajo people about their own culture. It's a little different, you know. People have taken well to that I'm not Navajo, and being able to share their culture with them. And I'm still learning. I don't think I'll ever stop. I've been learning a lot about Navajo culture for 15 years. And I feel like I barely touched the iceberg, you know, just at the tip of it. I still haven't learned much, although with all that I know, it's barely anything compared to people like a gentleman that I'm learning from. You know, his 60 years worth of knowledge is amazing. And like you said earlier, you always take it with you. And it's the same with, you know, I feel like that when I'm working with the fiber, whether it's making something or weaving something or just processing the wool.
It is, you know, it's a great way to work within our own community of people, including, you know, the youth and the elders. So I feel like the cultural arts really is like a bridge builder between different age ranges of people, especially in our own Native communities. So I'm really glad to hear that you're doing that. So I heard you mention that you are a chef. Is that what you said? Can you tell me a little bit more about that? Something new I didn't know about you.
Okay. Yes, I'm a certified executive chef. I've cooked for the better part of 20 years. I started an apprenticeship at Mandalay Bay in Las Vegas when I was young. I just turned 21. And from there, my career took off. And I worked several places. I've owned a few restaurants. I assisted the Navination Gaming Enterprise in opening all the Navajo casinos. I think the best time I had was working with Dene College. And it was great. Working at the college, working with the students, and we really got to immerse ourselves with the food and the traditional aspect is where, you know, we did butcherings at the college. We, you know, harvest wild plants, cooked with them, along with DBI too. DBI was Dene Bi'ina at the time. A part of the organization is more of a just a chef, somebody that they would, you know, call and ask to cook for an event. Or I would just show up randomly and just kind of hang out and watch what they were doing because I was curious. I got to meet people through Dene Bi'ina, and they helped me a lot with the traditional foods. And, you know, that's kind of where the weaving interest got started. The dyes, you know, some of them are plants. Well, they're all plants, I'm sorry. The dyes, you know, some of them are medicinal, some of them are food that we can eat. And, you know, they have multi-uses. That is really intriguing to me, so I just kept going down that path as a chef. It was fun. It was great. I enjoyed it a lot. I still cook today. I still work with food with DBI. We do the sheep to table. We have a program for that. We spent last year doing a lot of documentary videos. We're currently still editing them. And they'll be available on the website soon that people can watch and learn two different things. One is the traditional aspect of, say, like butchering, and one is how I would do it at a USDA facility and the difference between the two. Also cooking traditional foods and then a more modern way to cook with the traditional ingredients. So we try to cover a wide range through the program, through our grant. So you know, that was a lot of fun.
I feel like cooking is one of those communal activities that parallels in actually all global culture, but specifically here in the Southwest, you know, we have the Apaches, the Pueblos, the Navajos, the Utes, some Papago or Pima. And a lot of times, a lot of our events are engaged around food, mm-hmm. right? So you mentioned mutton. Mutton is a staple product within the Navajo culture. And before that, it probably was deer. But, you know, as we became more sedentary, we started farming, and then we started raising sheep. And then we started using sheep as our everything, not only for food consumption. My question for you, Franco, is have you ever had sheep before you lived here? And if not, how was it? And then also as a white man Apache, what is your people's sustenance?
Okay, the sheep question. Prior to coming here, no, I have never had sheep. Never had mutton, lamb. It never crossed my mind to even try it. Even as a chef, I've cooked it. I've seen it. But I never really tried it. You know, never really ate it. The funny story, I was invited to Aneth. They're having a ceremony there. And it was a 4-day ceremony, but we were there for 5 days. We butchered every day, a sheep every day. And I have never had so much mutton in my life. The first time I tasted it, it was this very unique, strange explosion in my mouth. Yeah, I had never had it before. It was new to me, the flavor. It was so robust. It just blew up in my mouth and overwhelmed everything. The smell overwhelmed everything. It was something else. I was like, whoa, what is that? You know, yeah. It was like, what am I eating? You know, it's like, is this a sheep? Really a sheep? You know, is this how they taste? Yeah, for your very first time, and you know, being in Aneth, there's not very much in Aneth, so you know, just the service station. So I pretty much ate just mutton for a whole week, and I think I was good for about a year until I had mutton again. I do eat mutton today, not a lot. The flavor is still unique to me. It's good. I enjoy it. I enjoy having a sandwich or a bowl of stew. I just can't do it every day. I can do it maybe once a week or once every 2 weeks. I'll have something. Yeah, so that's my mutton experience.
Well, you know, in our Navajo culture, growing up as children, a lot of times our grandmothers, our matriarchs would tell us, you know, if we were feeling sick or like we were feeling sad or lonely, or, you know, where our, pretty much, I guess our spirit man wasn't feeling up and up, they would always tell us, you need to eat some mutton, that will cure you. Mm-hmm. And that's what they would tell us, you know, it's a teaching that they say, go, if you want to feel better, go eat some mutton. So mm-hmm. they'd tell us that, you know, I think that's great that you were able to experience that cultural food. And you really had a good experience with it. Because when you cook mutton the different ways, because when you boil it and then, or if you fry it and then if you cook it outside, it's a whole nother, it's like so different tasting. I don't know how to explain it, but you know what I mean now since you've had it.
Yes.
But as an Apache, like you mentioned that, you know, you haven't tried it before. So what are the main foods of Apache culture that you grew up with?
Today was mostly beef. During when the soldiers came and occupied, you know, the Apache territories after the forts had been set up and everything, one of the things they did for us was introduce us to cattle. So we became ranchers, and it stayed that way. Still today, you know, we're still ranchers. Not very many ranches are left, but they're still out there. Before the beef, deer, elk, pheasants, the quail, rabbits, you know, things like that, turkeys, just any wildlife that was out there. That was our main diet, that and corn and nuts. We ate a lot of nuts. Along the Apache territory, the Mogollon Rim region all the way down to Tucson, there are emery oaks. And the emery oak produces an acorn. It's the only acorn that you don't have to leach to take out the arsenic in it. You can eat it just straight off of the ground. Other acorns, you can do that. You'll die of poisoning. So you have to boil the acorn and leach it out and rinse it good and then dry it before you can eat it. With the emery oak, it's an amber color shelled acorn, and we just pick it off the ground and eat it. And that was the main staple of our diet, was the acorn. And the nutritional value in it, I think it was a tablespoon of acorn flour is equivalent to a full dinner plate as far as the nutritional value. So that's, we mostly harvested nuts, berries, things like that. The hunting part, we did hunt, but it wasn't like we hunted every day, you know. It was just mostly gathering and nuts and berries and roots and things like that.
That's really interesting. I never knew that about the acorns. One of the staple products, I think, in Navajos is pinon, mm-hmm. pinon nut. You know, we have it's a cultural way of maintaining nutrition too in our lives. So when the pinon trees are producing, a lot of times Navajos will be saying, go to this place over here, they have good pinons. Go over here, they have good pinons. So I know here in the northeast part of the Navajo Nation, up in the Largo Canyon Navajo Dam area, that's a good place when the pinons are coming around. A lot of people love to go there. So I think it's interesting, Franco, that you're talking about, you know, your food culture of the White Mountain Apaches, but then you've experienced the Navajo food culture. And, you know, as a chef, I'm sure in your mind you're envisioning these sort of fusions that could happen between maybe foods. You know, we are pretty close in tribal location, right? White Mountain Apaches are there in like central, almost north central Arizona. And then Navajos here. And so even though we are close in relative locations, we're still very unaware of each other's, in this case, food. You know, food choices mm-hmm. are base foods, but I think we share a lot of commonalities. And so I think both cultures understood that importance of vitamins and nutrients that go into what we eat, you know, back in our, say, our grandfather's days, you know, nuts. So we probably knew that nuts had a value of nutrition and made us healthy. So it's great that you know that knowledge. And have you ever used acorns in your own dishes that you make?
Not in a commercial kitchen, only at home. Sad to say, I haven't had acorn in a few years. I rarely ever go home anymore. It's just the work and the location. It's a long drive. So when I do eat acorn, if not, I'll cook it or I'll bring some back home, mm-hmm. you know, pick some up down there and bring it back with me and cook it at home. It's acorn, the flower, it's a unique flavor, just like mutton. So my uncle, who's Spanish, explained to me that it tastes like soap. mm-hmm. You know, the first time we gave him acorn stew, he was really hesitant about taking the second bite. Yeah, he didn't like the flavor too much. Now today that, you know, he's been with us for a while, it's grown on him. So he enjoys it. He loves a bowl of acorn stew, just like I enjoy a bowl of mutton.
Yeah.
You know, it's something that takes time to get used to, the unique flavor. So, but yeah, not in the commercial kitchen have I used acorn, just only at home. A lot of the traditional foods that I've cooked in commercial kitchens are mostly Navajo foods, believe it or not. And that's just because of the location and working here on an Iowa reservation. There's an abundance of it. You know, I know where to get it. So I go to different places, I get what I need, and I take it back and I make it for an event or for, say, like at the college, Denning College in Salie, when I was cooking there, we'd come to Napping, get chichin and make desserts out of it, or, you know, and get our corn there to make cakes and stuff. Yeah. We had lunch one day where I had ordered like 250 sheep head and I cooked them all. So, you know, there's mostly Navajo foods that I've been cooking commercially, or in a commercial kitchen or commercial setting, and that's just due to the location. I moved away from home and back in 1999, and I have not moved back home since then. Mm-hmm. So I've been everywhere else but home.
Yeah. Well, you know, as far as cultural landscape, you're probably still home, you know, because within the four corners, you know, like I said, we all share, as tribal people, this mm-hmm. area. And for those of you who don't know what chichin is, it's a red berry porridge. It's a wild berry that grows in the high desert, and it's sort of like a delicacy food that Navajos like to make, where they gather these red berries and then make them into this porridge sort of consistency. And then the other one would be, I'm sure you've made before, is blue corn, right? Mm-hmm. Blue corn mush porridge.
Yes.
Yeah. And then you can make the cakes from that also. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And then we make just even like the yellow, roasted yellow cornmeal cakes. And yeah, this is where you take, like we took different stories from people. Like they would tell us, we used to have, you know, their grandparents or their great grandparents had peach orchards. So, like, you know, there was a natural sweetener. So I imagine they would use it to sweeten their food. So we make the cake, but then we put peaches inside of it. Or we put, like, pinon, roasted pinon that's inside of the cake as well with the peaches. You know, and just start creating the different things from different stories that are gathered, that I gather as I'm traveling around the reservation, listening to people talk or... going out to somebody's sheep camp and, you know, visiting with them and hearing their stories, I go back to the kitchen and take that story and create a dish out of it. We did a lot of that, and it was a lot of fun and very interesting to put everything together on a plate like that.
Food is very much a communal effort, and it's really tied to, like I said, our cultural landscape and then our stories of our identity as a people, right? Mm-hmm. So it's really great that you're recognizing that food is connected to our cultural history, our oral history, our oral stories. And so that's a very important connection. And for me, as a visual artist, I'm seeing this visual process as you're talking about food and weaving and sheep and wool and acorns. All those things have important part of our identity as Native people here in this area. And I think it's really good that you, Franco, are coming to the Navajo Nation and bringing those stories and then bringing your own experiences of your life as a chef. And, you know, because a lot of what I tell Navajo people is that they don't remember that, you know, we as Navajo people are given the artistic way of being for a purpose. It's not totally for our own sake. It's to help the people. And a lot of that teaching is your art is made to help the people heal, whatever way that may be. So I think it's, you know, everything happens for a purpose. And so maybe the fact that you're here now is you're trying to only help your boys, your kids, with their identity, but then you're going to help other young people and then other maybe just adults too and elders to come back to the middle, right, and mm-hmm. help heal, especially after pandemic happened. A lot of people are looking for direction in life and meaning, and I think we as artists, people who create things, this is our time, this is our role in life right now, and we need to recognize the fact that we are here for a reason. And the gifts that we bring with us are going to help other people. So that's what I hear with you, mm-hmm. you know, and a lot of times we don't think about that, but I think that's really why we're here. So I'm really thankful that you came here, Franco, to tell your story about art and about food, because that is always going to be who we are, and we're always going to tell those stories. So I am just so grateful that you came by, and it was really great talking to you. So with that, everybody, I'd like to thank you for listening to Native Art Voices of the Four Corners, and we hope you'll be able to hear us online too in all the podcast outlets, and leave a comment if you'd like, and thank you for coming today, Franco.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah.
Did you enjoy that podcast? We hope that you did. And if you did, share it with your friends. And if you really want to keep podcasts like this coming, please support KSJE. You can do it easily online at ksje.com.